with Yom Kippur around the corner, let's discuss first in general what issues will come up this year, Tavshin Pei Aleph, for the Corona season on Yom Kippur. First, we'll start with the night of Yom Kippur. The night going into Yom Kippur, we have Kol Nidre. And if all things are going well, and we can participate in Minyanim, then there's no question. Kol Nidre is a pinnacle of Yom Kippur. But in event that we cannot participate in a synagogue, either because the shuls are closed or because you're in quarantine, for whatever reason, do you recite Kol Nidre B'Yachid? That's question number one for today. Question number two, on the other side of Yom Kippur, going out of Yom Kippur, we have Ne'ilah. And this year, the question has come up here in Israel very often, very frequently, about multiple minyanim. We're only allowed X number of people for each minyan. How early can we start Ne'ilah, such that the minyan coming in after us, the second minyan, will still have enough time to recite Ne'ilah? Does Ne'ilah have to be very late? Can it be very early? What's the story with Ne'ilah? Question number three. A very strong minug of Tvila b'mikvah on Erev Yom Kippur. Some Rishonim seem to assume it might even be Doraisa. This year, the mikvos, generally speaking, again, every generalization has its exception, but the women's mikvos are pretty good. They have a cleaning system. The men's mikvahs are a little bit more of a challenge. Question number four. For those who cannot make it to shul on Yom Kippur, what about Yizkor? Question number five. If our minyanim will be taking place outdoors, what about the minog of Hishtachava, which is a very old, ancient minog on Yom Kippur that dates back to the Beis HaMikdash? Question number six. Who fasts this year? If, for example, I'm in quarantine, I had exposure to someone with corona, if I tested positive to corona, do I have symptoms? Do I not have symptoms? And if I have to eat on Yom Kippur, how much do I eat? How frequently? At what intervals? And finally, question number seven, and this is for a very specific audience, but nevertheless, it's a fascinating question about those who are in charge of health services, especially nurses in hospitals here in Israel. Very, very relevant question. Do they fast? Because if a nurse is dehydrated, that has a double impact. Number one, it's going to affect her health, and number two, it will have a detrimental effect on her ability to save others. So these are some of the topics that Amir Tzah Hashem we want to cover in the short time that we have. Let's begin with the first one, and that's Kol Nidre. What is Kol Nidre all about? There's a fundamental machlokas in the Rishonim, and perhaps the difference will be whether or not it's meaningful to recite Kol Nidre if I'm not in a tzibur. I'm davening by myself. The Rush and many other Rishonim maintain that Kol Nidre is actually Atoras Nidorim, which means that we get together three people and they stand around together as a tribunal, and the entire Tzibur, by reciting Kol Nidre, is asking those three people, that tribunal, for Atoras Nidorim. And here we have two issues if somebody is davening by himself, according to this school of thought. The first issue is, where are the three people that form a tribunal if I'm alone? Who's going to be Mater Neder? What meaning would Kol Nidre have in the absence of a tribunal to be Mata Nidorim, according to these Rishonim. And question number two, even if somehow davening b'yichidus, I can link up with a shul where there are three people, maybe because I'm davening outside on a merpeset, whatever it might be, but nevertheless, these three people are unaware of my presence. Can they be matir neder just anonymously as a kind of general hataras nedarim that will include everyone? As far as kol nidrei as hataras nedarim is concerned, well, since everyone is in shul, I don't have to know everyone by name to be matir their nedarim, but nevertheless, I see them as a unit, as a community, and as hataras nedarim. But how would hataras nedarim work for someone who's outside the shul? And therefore, the conclusion that we derive from this part of the discussion is that Hataras Nedarim, according to the Rush and others who agree with the Rush, the Echidus is meaningless. There's no way, no how, that Kol Nidre could function as the Rush would have it, and what justifies Kol Nidre and its purpose is Hataras Nedarim if I'm davening the Echidus. However, Rabbeinu Tam is absolutely opposed to the Rush. And in his dissenting opinion, which is quoted extensively by the Rishonim in Nedarim Daf Chav Gimel Amid Beis, Rabbeinu Tam contends that Kol Nidri is not Hataras Nedarim, not at all. But rather, Kol Nidri is what's called Mesiras Moda. If I had a whiteboard, I would write it on the whiteboard. Mesiras Moda means that I could make a statement and declare that any nedarim that I take from now and henceforth during the year to come should be null and void. Which means the following, that after Mesiras Moda, if I take a vow during the course of the year to come, one of two possibilities will happen. First possibility is, and that's what justifies Kol Nidri according to Rabbeinu Tam, is that I forgot about my Moda. It just slipped my mind. I kind of blurted out a neder or a shavua without realizing that I myself was Moser Moda. The second scenario, I knew about my Moser Moda, and nevertheless, I took the vow. In the first case scenario, the Moda works, and it's very effective. And it basically is a disclaimer for future nedarim, if when I take the neder tomorrow, or a month from now, or half a year down the line, I forgot my Mesiras Moda. And the way Moda operates is, it basically says that since he forgot about the Moda, he wasn't really fully serious about his neder. It was not with what we call haflas gemiras das. Hafla is any kind of a vow. And with regard to vows, pledges, and the like, we need full Gili Das. We absolutely have to indicate that we are certain, we are totally committed to this vow or to this pledge. If there's any element of doubt or lack of commitment, then the neder or the shvuah is not chal. And what the Mesiras Moda is, which is a fascinating mechanism, almost works magically. It sets up for future nedarim an absence of full-fledged Gemiras Das. But again, that only operates if and when I took the neder and I forgot about the Mesiras Moda. If I was aware of the Moda, then I could be Mavatel my Moda. Now, the question is, A, do we accept Rabbeinu Tam? B, would Rabbeinu Tam give us an opening to encourage those who are davening the Yechidus this year to recite Kol Nidri? So in order to answer these questions, we have to mention that there are two customs in terms of the Nusach of Kol Nidri. Rabbeinu Tam insists that we take out a mistaken Nusach. Some of the Machzorim, according to Rabbeinu Tam, many of the Machzorim, have a mistake, according to Rabbeinu Tam. And it should not say Miyom Kippurim Shavar Ad Yom HaKippurim Haba Aleinu L'Tova. Cross that out, says Rabbi Natan. What it should say is not I'm invalidating past Nidorim, but rather it should say Miyom HaKippurim Azeh Ad Yom HaKippurim Haba Aleinu L'Tova. Means from Yom HaKippurim Tavshin Pei Aleph until Pei Beis. That's the correct nusach. And way after Rabbeinu Tam, probably about 3 or 4 centuries later, the Radbaz, Rabbeinu David ibn Ezra, ibn Zimra in Cairo, about 5 centuries ago, he's a contemporary of the Beit Yosef, he writes that his minhag is to add 2 nuschos and to fulfill both the Rosh and Rabbeinu Tam. And we should recite Miyom HaKippurim Sha'avar Ad Yom HaKippurim Hazeh U'Miyom HaKippurim Hazeh Ad Yom HaKippurim Haba. Meaning, according to Radbaz, which is a very familiar and widely accepted Nusach, Kol Nidre should fulfill both Shitot, both the opinions of the Rosh and Rabbeinu Tam. We should mention past Nidorim and future Nidorim. It's Hataras Nedarim, and at the same time, it's Mesiras Modah. And we basically, if you pardon the expression, kill 2 birds with 1 stone. And that's the Nusach that we're very, very familiar with. Now, if we accept the Rosh, and the purpose of Hataras, of Kol Nidre is Hataras Nedarim, and the Rosh, by the way, quotes Gaonim, like Rav Amram Gaon. And again, if you happen to have the text that is called Pelach Rimonim, you'll see this on page 38. Kol Nidre Biyachid is meaningless. There's no way that you can be Matir Nidorim without the presence of a tribunal. So you're alone, it's out. However, if you have members of your family who are davening with you at home, outside of the shul, and you can gather them together, and each one will recite Hataras Nedarim, then even according to the Rosh, Hataras Nedarim is mandated, and we will fulfill the minhag the way the Rosh has it, Miyom HaKippurim Sha'avar Ad Yom HaKippurim Hazeh. Now, who is kosher, who qualifies to make up this tribunal of 3 people? Relatives are qualified. Nushim probably will qualify. Ketanim will not qualify. But let's fast forward to Rabbeinu Tam. According to Rabbeinu Tam, the purpose, the raison d'etre in fancy Italian, of Kol Nidre is Mesiras Modah. Miyom HaKippurim Zeh Ad Yom HaKippurim Abaleinu, for next year, for the future Nidorin. Would it make sense, according to Rabbeinu Tam, to be Moser Modah B'Yechidus? I'm all alone. And here we have a Gevaldige Chidush of the Levush. The Levush also lived about the same time as the Radbaz, 5 centuries ago. And he writes that what you need is a Gilui Das. In other words, in Mesiras Modah, the issue is, would a tribunal be necessary to effectuate the Mesiras Modah? Is Mesiras Modah what we call in Talmudic language a chalos? You know, it's creating something new, and it has a formal requirement and conditions that have to be met. It's constructing something new, what we call Lekiyum HaDavar. If Mesiras Modah is Lekiyum HaDavar, then it could be that the Modah requires a Beis Din. However, the Levush paskins that Mesiras Modah is a Gilui Das. It's a formal recitation or declaration in which I reveal, by stating it, what my intention is. And therefore, says the Levush, Tafresh Yutes, Kol Nidre Eino Tzarech Tzibur. According to Rabbeinu Tam, we don't have to gather together the entire Tzibur in order to fulfill Mesiras Moda, and the Minog of Kol Nidre can be reduced to Mesiras Moda. And Mesiras Moda just means that I have to make this declaration. It's really between me and the Almighty. I'm just telling God that, as far as I'm concerned, I don't want any Nedarim. The last thing I want is to enter into this new year with vows that I might take during the course of the year to come and violate, Chas v'Shalom, those vows. Therefore, Halacha L'maisa, when a person recites Kol Nidre B'Yachid, and there'll be many such Jews this year, unfortunately, then he should only mention the Nusach of Miyom HaKippurim Zeh, V'ad Yom HaKippurim Ba'oleinu. He should omit Miyom HaKippurim She'avar, V'ad Yom HaKippurim Zeh. So everyone who's listening to me, please take out your machzorim, and if you realize you're going to be davening B'yichidus, cross out that line right now, so you don't forget. Because otherwise you're making this into a joke. You're going to recite Kol Nidre for last year's Nedarim, past Nedarim, and it's meaningless. There's no Ataris Nedarim B'yachid. But in order to fulfill the minig of Rabbeinu Tam, and we saw the Red Baz is very excited about Rabbeinu Tam, he wants to make sure it's in our Nusach, we're going to add that phrase. And in our case, if we're praying B'yachidus, that's all it's going to have, is Miyom HaKippurim Zeh Ad Yom HaKippurim Haba. And that's Mesiras Moda. Now you might ask me, I already did this on Erev Rosh Hashanah. Many of you have fulfilled that minog of Mesiras Moda on Erev Rosh Hashanah. If I'm davening B'yachidus on Yom Kippur, there's no point to call Nidre. I've already been Moser Moda. So then I would tell you that since there's a minog to recite Kol Nidre, and it has a very powerful emotional impact, I'm basically stating to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, declaring that there's one sin that I'm doing my utmost to avoid any violation of the sin. Therefore, God, please judge me favorably and estimate, evaluate me as someone who is trying very hard to avoid sin. We should fulfill that minog, even B'yachid, even if I was Moser Moda on Erev Rosh Hashanah. I'll stop for questions in a few minutes. I just want to get in a second discussion, which is even more complex, and that is Ne'ilah. As we said before, we're limited in how many people could daven in the synagogue, and for that matter, we're limited, at least here in my part of the world, as to how many people can gather together to daven even outside the synagogue. And therefore, we may want to set up multiple minyanim, as we mentioned last week, but last week we were talking about shofar and how to truncate, perhaps, tfilas, shachris, and musaf of Rosh Hashanah. Now we're talking about Yom Kippur. And it becomes very, very relevant in the case of Ne'ilah. Because if we assume that Ne'ilah has to be prayed at the very end of the day, then there's no room to accommodate two minyanim in that very small slice of time. So when is the proper time for Ne'ilah? And if this question is relevant every Yom Kippur, it's even more relevant this year because of Corona. So the issue is, how early can we daven Ne'ilah, allowing for another minyan to come in, and still, as we would say, chaparai Ne'ilah? One thing is for sure, Ne'ilah must come after Mincha, meaning that there's a critical sequence here, so we cannot daven Ne'ilah before Mincha. Now again, when is the earliest time for Mincha? Mincha has to be davened 1.5 hour after Chatzos. Here in Israel, for the Israelis here in the audience, Chatzos is approximately 12:30, and therefore the earliest time for Mincha, which we call Mincha Gedola, is at 1 p.m. Again, that's going to change wherever you are on the face of the earth. So at 1 p.m., we're davening mincha. No problem. That's perfect. For any year. For any Yom Kippur. Can I daven ne'ilah right after mincha? So the issue itself, in its source, is in the Yerushalmi. The Yerushalmi, and of all places in the Masechta Brachos, addresses the question, when is the proper time for ne'ilah? Again, we're not talking about Corona now. When is the proper time for ne'ilah on Yom Kippur in general? And it's machlokas between Rabbi Yochanan and Rav. Now, the two opinions of Rabbi Yochanan and Rav will make very little sense to us, meaning we won't know how to define them. But we'll mention them anyway, and then we'll go through the Rishonim very quickly to see how the Rishonim define the Shita of Rabbi Yochanan and the Shita of Rav. Rabbi Yochanan holds that Ne'ilah refers to what's called Sharei HaHeichal. Rav says that Ne'ilah refers to Sharei Shamayim. So what is Ne'ilah Sharei Shamayim, that's Rav, and what is Ne'ilah Sharei Heichal, that's Rabbi Yochanan? Then Yerushalmi goes on and makes a statement that Ne'ilah should be recited at the time of Chama Barashei Ilonos, when the sun can be seen setting on the top of the trees. That's obviously earlier than sunset. So here we have again a major controversy between the Ran, Rabbeinu Nissim, and the Rosh. The Ran appears on the pages of the Rif in Masechta Yoma, on Daf Vav Amud Beis, and he says that Rav Shita is much later than Rabbi Yochanan. When Rav says Ne'ilah Sharei Shamayim, it means when the day ends. This is fascinating. It means that according to the Ran, Rav Shita is that we recite Ne'ilah after Shkia. And basically that's called Lila. According to Rabbi Yochanan, says the Ran, what is Ne'ilah Sharei HaHeichal? That is Bayom Samach L'Shkia. It's during the daytime, but it's quite late. It's not after Shkia, that's already Sharei Shamayim, which reminds me, I have to write something to Rabbi Strachler. Okay, fine. And that's according to Rav, that's after the day is ended, after Shkia. Whereas Rabbi Yochanan is called Samach L'Shkia. And therefore, according to the Ran, when the Gemara in the Yerushalmi says, quote, Chama Barashei Ilonos, that's a reflection of Rabbi Yochanan Shita, who has Ne'ilah Samach L'Shkia Sechama, Bizman Ne'ilah Saheichal, Sharei HaHeichal. However, and this is most relevant for our situation, the Ran Paskins, based on the Rif, like Rav. So according to Rav, and according to the Ran's Psak like Rav, Ne'ilah is out of the question. There's no early Ne'ilah. It just doesn't exist. It's got to be after Shkia Sacham. And basically what happens is, again, I'm not getting into philosophical discussions, but with sunset, the day of Yom Kippur comes to an end, and the Sharei Shamayim are now locking up. We get in that Ne'ilah because we synchronize it with those very precious moments when the gates of heaven are closing. And we get in our very last tefillos. That's what Ne'ilah is all about. To daven Ne'ilah earlier would be undermining the whole purpose of Ne'ilah. The whole power of Ne'ilah. After all, We've already prayed Ma'ariv, Shachris, Musaf, Mincha. Now you're reading a fifth tefillah, Ne'ilah. What's the purpose of Ne'ilah? And the answer is that there's a moment in time when I can synchronize my extra tefillah and it has a specific purpose and it's accepted on high at the time of Shari Ne'ilah Shari Shamayim, which is, says the Ran, Shkiyas HaCham. To daven Ne'ilah earlier would be meaningless. And the Ran paskins like Rav. But the ball game is not over, as we'd say in sports. The Rush quotes the Maram Mirutenberg, his Rebbe, and the Maram Mirutenberg rejects the Ran. Now, keep in mind, the Maram Mirutenberg is before the Ran, but what I mean to say is that it's a dissenting view. Number one, Ein Halacha K'Rav. Maram Mirutenberg has a whole slew of proofs that we don't accept the Shita of Rav. And as a matter of fact, we daven Ne'ilah earlier. See, basically, I don't want to get off on a tangent, but the Maram Mirutenberg sees a problem in the Ran's understanding of Rav, because after Shkiyas HaChama, if it's already Lila, that's a time for Tefillas Arvus. So what should we be davening? You have now, you're avalanched by a double Chiyuv Tefillah, multiple Tefillahs synchronizing themselves at that moment of Lila. You're Chayiv both in Ne'ilah and in Ma'ariv. Anyway, leaving out all the complicated nuances, the Rush, based on the Maram Mirutenberg, insists that even according to the Rav in the Yerushalmi, we have to begin the Tefillah Mibod Yom. And when the Yerushalmi says Hachama Berashe Ilanos, that comment was not made for an expansion or an explanation of Rabbi Yochanan Shita, but rather according to both Rav and Rabbi Yochanan. Rav Shita is that we should end Tfilas Ne'ilah at a later time after Shkia. But Rav would agree that the proper time to begin Ne'ilah is before Shkia, such that Ne'ilah comes before Ma'ariv. Do you see where the Maram Mirutenberg circumvents the problem of having two tefillos that obligate me simultaneously? Now, for those who are following in the text, we're up to page 40. Many poskim, and we'll see this reflected in the Shulchan Aruch, operate with a certain analogy. And that is that this time period for Ne'ilah, which is described in Yerushalmi, in Brachos, as Chama Barash Eilonos, should be identified with the moment in which we light Hadlokas Ner Shabbos, on Erev Shabbos. Now, we're going to light Hadlokas Ner Shabbos Bizman Shachama Barash Ilonos. It means at a time period that's before Shkia, obviously, we don't light Shabbos candles after Shkia. How long before Shkia is that period of time, which is called Chama Barash Ilonos? Now, there are a multiple shitos on this issue. The Rav Shulchan Aruch, for example, is of the opinion that Hadlokas Ner Shabbos should be right before Shkia, 4 minutes before Shkia. And he quotes other shitos that it's 10 minutes before Shkia. The Bach, on the other hand, holds that it's a half hour before Shkia. And finally, quotes the Yesh Omrim, that it's from Plag HaMinchan on. Now, what's fascinating is that the super commentary on the Yerushalmi, which is called the Pnei Moshe, who lived about 200 years ago, he actually identifies Chama Barashi Lanos as Plaga Mincha. Now, Plaga Mincha is roughly about an hour and a quarter before Shkia. And the Shulchan Aruch Paskins in Siman Tafrei Shchav Gimel, that we should begin the Ila Bizman Shachama Barashi Lanos, and we should end Ne'ilah right before Shkia. He doesn't tell me exactly when is Chama Barashi Lanos. So what does the Mishnah Berurah say? He says that I efshar lahaschil lifnei plaga mincha. Again, you have to be medai carefully in the words of the Shulchan Aruch of Chafetz Chaim. And he says, don't begin ne'ilah before plaga mincha. So again, the Shulchan Aruch says we got to begin ne'ilah before shkia. We got to end at shkia. How long before shkia are we meant to recite tefillas ne'ilah? It's totally ambiguous. But if we read the Mishnah Berurah carefully, at least, again, I can't promise you that this is what the Shulchan Aruch had in mind, but at least we'll get the opinion of the Chafetz Chaim. He's telling you don't start ne'ilah before plaga mincha. And if you recall, the Pnei Moshe had indicated that he thought that Chama Barashi Lanos was after plaga mincha. And therefore, if we accept this diuk in the Mishnah Berurah, and by the way, for Sfaradim, I don't know if you know, there's a parallel sefer that's accepted by Sfaradim, Eidot HaMizrach, like the Mishnah, that's called the Kaf HaChaim. He also came to the same conclusion on his own, that we cannot recite Ne'ilah before Plaga Mincha, but we can recite, and we should recite Ne'ilah after Plaga Mincha. And we should time it to complete Ne'ilah by Shkia. So you have an hour and a quarter, roughly, to recite Ne'ilah. What the Shulchan Aruch does tell us is that we should complete Ne'ilah Samach L'Shkia Sacham. Maybe give just me one more minute, just because I'm going to lose my... Okay. Now, if this be the case, then the problem that we're going to face with Ne'ilah, if we want to fit in not one Ne'ilah, but two Ne'ilos in that very short period of time, is what we call Slichos. After all, Ne'ilah is full of Slichos. If you reduce the Shmone Esrei and the Chazor Sashatz simply to the seven Brachos, it's a very quick deal. You could finish quite quickly. The minhag that we instituted in the Amic Learning Center, that has nothing to do with Corona, is that we take all the Slichos out of Ne'ilah and we recite them after Shmon Esrei is over. Why do we do such a thing? Not because of Corona, but because we are very excited, based on the Vilna Gaon, here in Yerushalayim, to recite Birchas Kohanim, which can only be recited before Shkia. If we're going to recite all the Slichos within the framework of Chazos HaShatz, we will not be able to get the Birkas Kohanim in before Shkia. So what we did was like a crane, we lifted the Slichos to after Chazos HaShatz is completed, and we gain an enormous amount. Number one, we get Birchas Kohanim in before Shkia. Imagine the Bracha LeKohanim right before the end of Yom Kippur. That's a great achievement. And we could take our time with Slichos. Why? Because we probably have about a half hour now to fill in until we blow the shofar. So we're going to recite Slichos at a very slow pace with Nigunim, and that's really the ultimate epitome of the experience of Yom HaKippurim. So we're going to end with those slichos. If we apply that kind of a principle here, then what we could do is, instead of having an arichus for tfilas ne'ila, we could theoretically fit in a double tfilas ne'ila. Now, the Shulchan Aruch says that we have to be makpid to complete tfilas ne'ila by shkia, or a little bit before shkia. If we accept the Shulchan Aruch, then once again, we're still in a very small, narrow opening here in terms of the period of time for Ne'ila. Even if we begin Ne'ila with Plaga Mincha, we don't have that much time if we want to finish Ne'ila before Shkia Sacham. Now here's one of the rare occasions when the Minog Yisrael seems to have rejected the Shulchan Aruch. There are many Rishonim and many Achronim who assume that we can take Ne'ila into the nighttime. Again, keep in mind, they're not worried about Birchas Kohanim. So what I told you before, forget about that now. They're not impressed by the Vilna Gaon or whoever is makpid for that Kepeda that we have to get Birchas Kohanim. And therefore, they're very comfortable. All these Rishonim and Achronim, I can give you the whole list, and you'll see it on page 41 if you have the text, with completing Ne'ila B'Sof HaYom. And when we look at the Rambam, for example, in Hilchos Tefillah, he says that the essence of Tefillas Ne'ila is Kidei LaHosif Tchina U'Bakosha. Now, what is this business about Lahosif Tchina Ubakosha? It could be that the Rambam might insist, and that's where the Shulchan Aruch got it from, that we have to complete Ne'ila before the day ends, because the whole purpose of Ne'ila is Hosafas Bakosha, to add an extra supplication. That's something that you want to do before the day expires. But yet, I'm not sure that everyone accepts the Rambam's opinion. It could very well be, and this I think I heard from my Rebbe, that the essence and the justification of Tefillas Ne'ila is to add an extra tefillah at the conclusion of the day. So that on a normal day or weekday we have Ma'ariv, Shachris, Mincha. If it's a day with Kiddush Hayom, we have Musaf in there. And then you have a chunk of time before the day slips away. But in the case of Yom Kippur, what we want to do is, we want to convert and transform Yom Kippur into a day of tefillah. And in order to achieve that goal, we want to be mesayim the day with a tefillah. It's not enough that we did mincha whenever we did mincha. We want to synchronize our completion of the day together with tefillah. And that's called linol esayom b'tefillah, to lock up or complete the day with tefillah. And if that be the case, then we can perhaps explain the many, many Rishonim and Poskim who insist that you can daven Ne'ila even at night. Because we have our luck of Tosefes Yontif, and the day is not truncated, it's not complete, simply because the sun has set. And as long as we're extending our day of Yom Kippur, and we do so through Ne'ilah, by reciting this tefillah, it is another way of synchronizing our tefillah with the closing of the gates, so to speak, the holy gates in the heavens. Now, what I'd like to just, before I take questions, is to just summarize what we call halacha lemaisa. And this you'll see on the bottom of page 41, going on to page 42, and he says the following. The ideal solution to the problem, when we're only allowed X number of people in the synagogue, is to have different parts of the synagogue. And I can tell you what's going on here in Israel. I don't know if you can tell me in Chutzots they have something similar. They're taking over schools, and each classroom is allowed, let's say, 10 people, whatever the number is. Or if you have a very large synagogue that might have a vestibule where you can have a minyan, it might have another sanctuary, more than one sanctuary. So that's the ideal situation. We're going to daven mincha, we're going to daven ne'ilah, and this is all going to take place during that very small slice of time, and we're going to finish by Shkia. If that's not a possibility, then what do we do? In the poskim, it's not really crystal clear. Will the poskim allow us to recite Ne'ilah earlier and complete Ne'ilah earlier to facilitate the next minyan, the next shift coming in? In our reality, he said, let's begin Ne'ilah at Plaga Mincha and daven. Again, it's hard to say these words about Yom Kippur, especially about Ne'ilah, and especially about someone who purchased Psicha for Ne'ilah, may have spent a lot of money on that. But we should be davening as fast as we can. And why? So that we'll allow completing Ne'ilah before Shkia in such a way that even a second minyan could come in and complete Ne'ilah before Shkia. I admit, it's very hard to engineer this. Very complicated. But this is what we should do. We have to be careful that the first minyan should not blow the shofar when they complete Ne'ilah. And here in Israel, on the Jerusalem horizon, the earliest time to blow shofar would be at 6:51, which is 9 minutes before 7. And of course, not to start malacha before that time, not to break a fast before the time. And for the addressing the second minyan that's going to complete after tzeis, or with tzeis, so they'll be wrapping up Ne'ilah at about 9 minutes before 7, they should not duchen, there should be no duchen. That's what we have. All right, let me take a break here for questions. Joe, you had something to say before?
No, I was just exactly what you're saying. You're talking about the two minyanim. You answered it at the end. Trying to make it in this way.
Again, we're going to... We're going to apply, Joe, just to summarize, we're going to apply two leniencies here. One leniency as far as the earliest time to start Ne'ilah, and the other leniency about the latest time to end Ne'ilah. So on the one hand, we're going to start, based on the diuk that we had in the Mishnah Berurah, the earlier minyan of Ne'ilah with Plaga Mincha. That's the earliest you can imagine. That's not the normal way we would do it on a regular year. We're going to apply second leniency for the second minyan, and instead of applying the rules that we saw in the Yerushalmi and in the Shulchan Aruch, that we should complete Ne'ilah by the time that Shkia Sachama comes around, we're going to add another 20 minutes, or whatever hell any minutes it takes to get to Tzeis HaKochavim, so that we're going to, let's say Shkia is at, I'm just throwing out a number, 6:30 p.m., and Tzeis HaKochavim is going to be at 9 minutes before 7, we're going to add that whole chunk of time, about a 21 minute chunk of time, to allow Ne'ila to enter into the Lila, and we're going to accept a leniency that the purpose of Ne'ila is not to enhance our bakoshos of Yom HaKippurim, because that we can't do anymore, but rather to make this day into a day of tefillah. And how do we do so? What's the makom b'patish? We end the day with tefillah, an extra tefillah that we don't have the rest of the year. And by synchronizing and completing the day of Yom Kippur with an extra tefillah, we have declared and transformed the day into a day of tefillah. Mitchilas oviyad sofa. And that's going to allow me to extend the ilah all the way into, you know, as we said, 6:51, meaning until Seis HaKochav.
Yeah, just with regards to this concept with the two minyanim, would you say, I'm imagining the second minyan is going to finish well after the actual end of the day?
No,
right?
Absolutely not. See, again, Joe, you know, we're in a sandwich over here. What do I mean by a sandwich? The earliest time we could start Ne'ilah, that's going to be the first minyan, is at Plaga Mincha. And then we're in the other sandwich that we cannot extend the Ilah beyond, again, I'm going to use this number, 6:51. We got to get everybody eating at that time. Personally, again, I don't want to get into trouble here. This is not politically correct. But I'm opposed to this business of Kiddush Levana right after Ma'ariv. I think it's a big mistake. Most of us, I can't say for all of us, some of us are Malachi Asharis, but most of us are just dying of dehydration. I mean, that's another issue that we'll get to if we have time, as far as the fasting question. But, and now you're going to add Kiddush Levana. So Baruch Hashem, together with some of my buddies over here in Har Nov, we started a whole new tradition that on Motzi Yom Kippur, we don't recite Kiddush Levana until like 9 o'clock. So we have like a chunk of 2 hours, you know, to enjoy our breakfast before we recite Kiddush Levana. But getting back to Ne'ilah, I don't want the Ne'ilah to extend beyond 9 minutes. Even that already is pushing the envelope. So again, the Lamaisa, we don't really have that much room for maneuvering here. To set up two minyanim is not going to be an ideal. I'm not even sure that you could orchestrate. I don't even know if it's feasible. In theory, it might be feasible. But in reality, I'm not sure if it is. But again, in the lumpness of it, it's very fascinating how we're applying two kulas. One in terms of the kickoff, and the other in terms of the end zone. So let me just...
I just have a quick question.
Oh, Bobby, how are you?
Hi. Going back to Kol Nidre, the Menahagim and Shuls now, people don't actually say Kol Nidre.
They don't?
Chazan says Kol Nidre.
Wow.
Chazan says Kol Nidre.
That, Bobby, and, again, you know... I don't know what I'm allowed to say, what I'm not allowed to say, but I think that's a grave error. Everyone should be saying Kol Nidre.
Right, right.
Maybe may say in the Machzorim, you know, to say it Belachash, you know, not Bekol Ram, because you don't want to interfere with the Chazan, etc. But
right, right.
I don't think there's any Shlichus over here. Nobody appointed anyone my Shlich to be Mater, my Dharma. I have to be Mater than myself.
But don't I have to say it out loud, actually? I have Belachash work.
Well, no, because again, since we're at Tzibur, and this tribunal is addressing itself to the entire Tzibur, do you remember last week I discussed the question of a classroom? I don't know if you were with me. And I said that their Hataras Nedarim is only going to work for those children who are registered in the class. You're sitting out there on your porch, overhearing that Taras Nedarim, that just won't do it. In the case of Kol Nidre, we have the tribunal that's up front, facing or representing the entire Tzibur. They don't have to recognize everyone by name, but they can declare that everyone here in this entity, this body, which is a legal body called a Tzibur, is included in that Taras Nedarim. Again, if you like Rabbeinu Tam, then this year you're in great style, because Rabbeinu Tam is saying that it's Mesiris Modo, and that's going to facilitate those who are davening the Yechidus.
We should have three people sitting there in the front, you know, like based in. That also should be part of the...
Again, I'm pretty sure, Bobby, I can't tell you what goes on in your neck of the woods, but I'm pretty sure that that's what goes on. That there are three people up front.
Never seen that, actually.
Never seen that? The Chazan should be flanked on the right and the left. I'm surprised.
They're holding a Torah. There's two people from the call holding the Torah.
Oh, that's also okay. I don't mind if they're holding the Torah.
Okay, I didn't know that's why.
Yeah. Okay. No, that holding the Torah has to do with other dinim, but... Rabosai, because of the... You know, we're getting close to Shkia. I'm joking. But I want to just shoot off a couple of issues here. Number one, what about Tvila before Yom HaKippurim, going to a mikvah? So you'll see a long discussion about this that goes on and on for no less than four pages of typewritten Hebrew small print. So to summarize these four pages, first of all, we make a big mistake when we think that we have to isolate Yom HaKippurim. The truth is that if you go back to the original sources, which is a sugya in Rosh Hashanah Daf Tes Zayin, there's a halacha called Chayav Adam L'Tayres Asmo B'Regel. And on the contrary, it would seem that the main impetus or push for Tvila is on the three regalim. And the Shibole Aleket in Siman Reish Pei Gimel, based on that Gemara Rosh Hashanah, says that Tahara is an integral part of preparing for a regel. In fact, he goes as far as to say, Chayav Adam L'Taris Atzmo, you know, before the regel. And he says that Tzorech Adam L'Kadish Atzmo Fnei Regel. Now that's something that's very new to our ears, but I emphasize this because the Shibole Aleket is a major source of psak. And then he adds Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur. Now, the language of the Shibole Aleket is very complicated here, so I'm going to sort of obfuscate it because we don't have time for this. In truth, his language is very difficult. He says, Kol Shkein Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur. It's not a Kol Shkein at all, because if it's a din of preparing for a regel, then Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur technically are not regolim. Regolim means a mitzvah of aliyah l'regel. And a regel is called a moed. Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur are not called moed. In fact, the Gemara in Masechta Erevin that I learned not long ago vacillates as to whether you recite Shechiyonu on Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur, because Shechiyonu is generated by a regel, and Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur does not have the status of a regel. So the Gemara said it's not worse than eating a new fruit. Okay, fine. In any event, the Rambam seems to place Tvila in a mikvah into a different perspective, and it has to do with entering into the Beis HaMikdash. Now, Yom HaKippurim, as you know, plays a special role in terms of entering into the Beis HaMikdash. And the entire focus of Yom HaKippurim is the Avoda in the Beis HaMikdash. Now, add to that, the Ramban also puts another element into the equation, and that is tshuva. And he says that Yom HaKippurim, which is a day of tshuva and kapara, requires tahara as part of tshuva. So we basically have three approaches to the minhag of tvila before Yom Kippur. One approach is that this is an extension of preparing for a golem, and that's in the context of the Shibole Aleket. The second approach is the Rambam's approach, that tvila has to do with going into the Beis HaMikdash. So we are, in a sense, Zeichel HaMikdash. We are also experiencing tvila as if we were going into the Beis HaMikdash. And there, in that context, we see Yom HaKippurim as having a very special role. And finally, the third explanation or approach to Tefillah on Yom HaKippurim is it's a Tefillah of Tara as part of the Mitzvah of Tshuva. And the Ramban and Rabbeinu Yonah quote the Pasuk, Lifnei Hashem Titaro. The Torah describes Tara with regard to Lifnei Hashem. Lifnei Hashem is a reference to Yom HaKippur. Now it's fascinating because Erev Yom HaKippur, as you know, plays a very special role in Halacha. There are tons of minhagim that apply to Erev Yom HaKippur besides the mitzvah d'oraisa of eating on Erev Yom Kippur, which the Gemara equates to fasting on Yom Kippur. That's how important it is. So that now Tevilah becomes an integral part of our experience of Erev Yom HaKippur, one of those minhagim of Erev Yom HaKippur. Now there's a fourth shita here of the Kolbo who says that Tevilah has to do with carry. And it's based on a Gemara Brachos that Ezra made a takona that you don't daven in front of Hashem if you're a Baal Keri without jumping into the mikvah. A Baal Keri could go into a mikvah on the very day that he became a Baal Keri. Now the Rush writes that today we don't have to be so careful about a Baal Keri going to mikvah because we don't have his askus b'taros. In other words, we're not coming in contact with those foodstuffs that could that are susceptible to tumah. However, the Rush says that even if we're not makbid the whole year round as a Baal Keri to go to mikvah, nevertheless, before Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur, we should be very careful to go to mikvah. The Magid Avram writes that since Tevilah on Erev Yom Kippur is an integral part of the process of Tshuva, and we indicate to the Almighty that we have a great desire and a will to purify ourselves, to sanctify ourselves in advance of the Yom HaNoraim, therefore, it's not just a minuk, it's really a chova. It could be that it's a chovah that was accepted upon ourselves as an integral part of hitoyer v'skadesh for the sake of tshuva. Now, are there substitutes for tefillah b'mikvah? If we have a problem this year, and again, I can't testify about Clanton Park. I can only tell you what we have here in Yerushalayim, and there are issues here for the men's mikvahs with regard to Corona. So the possibility is that if we would assume that the element of mikveh here is related to Tara in the context of Tumah v'Tara, and it's some sort of a zecher to the days of the Beis HaMikdash and the time periods in which we were misasik b'taros and the Takonis Ezra that a Baal Keri has to be mitayer himself in order to be mispalel to tefillah, then we might have a substitute, which of course is taking a shower, and that's called Teisha Kabim in the language of the Gemara Brachas Chaf Beis. And Teisha Kabim is the equivalent of 12.5 liters of water that has to be poured over his body. If we assume that the tefillah here is part of tshuva, then it's hard to believe that taking a shower would substitute for tefillah. But if the tefillah is more related to Tara from Tumah, like the case of Baal Keri, then this could be an acceptable replacement for Tevilah B'mikvah. Now, how long does it take for 12.5 liters of water to fall on your head? I do not know. My guess, tell me if you think I'm wrong here, is that You can't just jump into the shower for a minute and run out. I don't think you're going to get 12.5 liters of water on your head. It might take 5 or 10 minutes. I don't know if anybody could help me with that. I don't see any discussion about that.
We use it with regards to the taharos, and it really depends, I would say, on your shower head too. How many gallons per minute it takes.
But would you agree that it's at least a 5 minute stay in the mikveh, in the shower?
Well, it's the shower heads say the regular ones are 2.5 gallons per minute. So it's very calculable, but there's new ones which are like one gallon per minute. So you have to see what your shower head is.
Right, you have to adjust it. It's relative. Now, again, as I said, this is a four-page discussion. It's like a kudshus. Just on this issue of tefillah, I'm going to just read the final bottom line here, halacha lemaisa. He says the following, that the first thing you want to know is whether it's a mikvah mefukach, meaning is there supervision? Are they putting in chlorine into the water on a regular basis to clean out the mikvah? You have to ask your question about how many people are using the mikveh. And you'll find general guidelines from the Ministry of Health. And he says that if you were able to go to mikveh on Erev Rosh Hashanah, that also is a factor to consider into the equation. Again, if all things were ideal, we would be tovel on both Erev Rosh Hashanah and on Erev Yom Kippur. He says that we should be very careful that if we are going into the mikveh on Erev Yom Kippur, make sure that our nails are cut and our hairs are cut, because again, these collect all sorts of germs and so forth and so on. There may even be also issues of of chatzitza, if the hair is too long. And he says we should go down three times. Some people have a minig of five times, of seven times. Three times is enough for those who are able to find the proper mikveh, that, and it's not too crowded. If at the end of the day you have doubts about the supervision over the mikveh, no matter how small your doubts are, he calls it afilu safek katan. He says, with regard to pikuach nefesh, better not to be tovel at all. And since the Ramah allows for this substitute of teisha kabim in a case where it's very difficult for him to get to a mikveh, he's mitztayer. So therefore, he says, in our situation, certainly, and if there's any element of pikuach nefesh, we should rely on the Ramah and fall back on Teisha Kav. Now, what I didn't find here, it may be my mistake that I didn't find it, is a discussion about going into natural spring waters, where I think there would be less of a health problem. And I'm going to imagine in my mind that there will be people who cannot go into Yom Kippur without Tevila B'mikvah. And maybe they'll find, a private place, like not far outside Yerushalayim, if you know how to get off the road at the right time and then go down and you don't fall and, fall and break your neck. You can find a natural spring. Now, again, just fitting in quickly for those who can stay for another 5 minutes, as far as Yizkar is concerned, many people will not be able to go to shul. They'll be davening alone. Will they recite Yizkar? And he basically says that the answer is yes. That Yizkar could be recited even biyachid. Now let me add something here from Rav Shechter. Rav Shechter says that this year he feels that the Mara D'Asra, every rabbi should make this call, make this decision, if it's appropriate, to tell the youth not to go out of the shul during Yizkor. They should remain in the shul. Because he's afraid that if you let the youth, especially the young children and the young teenagers, go out in mass, there's going to be too much mixture and there won't be social distancing. And he says that that we should again, he says the rabbi of the community should decide, but basically we should tell the youth to stay, to remain inside the shul.
That's a question.
Yeah, David.
Shmini Tzur should be the same thing.
Yeah. Right.
Okay.
I mean, he doesn't mention, you know, he doesn't mention Yom Kippur specifically. He's talking about Yizkor in general, and he says that he would discourage the children, the young people, to go out of the shul, you know, join together as groups, because he warns the youth that if they're staying in the shul during Yizkor, they have to be very quiet, because young people sometimes, since they're not part of the Yizkor service, they start schmoozing, and then people lose their focus. So again, in the last 5 minutes of the shiur, I just want to mention fasting. And what I have here in front of me, which I think you have, is this guidelines from Rav David Lau, the chief rabbi of Israel. And he sets up the following guidelines. He says anyone who's quarantined should be fasting, meaning we don't know whether he has the disease or not. If he's already tested positive, then if he doesn't have symptoms, he should be fasting. If, on the other hand, and this is pretty radical, in my humble opinion, if he has symptoms and he tested positive, but he no longer has symptoms, in other words, entering into Yom Kippur, he feels fine, he says the following. Again, I'm just telling you what their chief rabbi of Israel says. This is pretty, in my mind, pretty revolutionary. He says that how many days have passed since the results of the test came out positive for coronavirus? During the first 5 days since the test, and he had symptoms. So here are the two conditions. A, it's within 5 days of the date of the test that came out positive. Number two, he has symptoms. He shouldn't fast. After 5 days, and have passed since the test came back, and he has no symptoms, then he should drink kishiyurim, or eat kishiyurim, for the next 5 days. So again, if a person is tested positive and he had symptoms, he should not be fasting Yom Kippur, the normal Yom Kippur, until 10 days pass by. And 10 days pass by, he has no symptoms, he fasts. Within the first 5 days after the test came back, if he had symptoms, even though he no longer has symptoms, he doesn't fast. Within the second 5 days, from day 5 till day 10, if he tested positive 9 days ago and he had symptoms, he has no symptoms now, then he eats and drinks kishiyurim. Now, what is kishiyurim? And he says, one more category. If he is ill, in moderate condition, I'm trying to translate from the Hebrew, he doesn't fast at all. Even if he has a document from the authorities, from the health authorities, that he is now healthy, if he's meaning healthy enough to fast, he should not be fasting. He should be eating kishiurim. In other words, if he was a cholakal, right, in a light condition, then we go through the discussion about the first 5 days after he tested, and then the next 5 days. If, on the other hand, he was a chole benoni, and how much more so if he was a chole kosher, he should not fast. Gam im hu kibel ishur mea shehivri. He says his immune system is still weak, and for a, if he hasn't passed the period of 3 months since the time that he got this bill of health, then he should be eating and drinking kishiurim. Now, what is kishiurim? It means that we wait an interval of 9 minutes between two achilos and two shtios. The achila is 27 gram, and the shtia is 37 millimeters. And he should drink or eat less than those shiurim, up to but not beyond those shiurim, every 9 minutes. An interval of every 9 minutes. And he says that on Erev Yom Kippur, he should already prepare a kli, let's say in the case of a liquid, a kos, and he should mark off on Erev Yom Kippur where is 37 millimeters, or where is 27 gram. And basically he's saying that the mitzvah sayom is fasting. If there is some sort of chashash or a suffix, then he should not come to shul. He should daven the achidus, and he should be careful about all the guidelines. And that's more or less a summary of what it says here in this famous document. It's already famous, even though it's only 2 days old, from the chief rabbi of Israel. I just want to read to you the Minchas Osher of Rav Osher Zelig Weiss, also on the same issue of fasting or not fasting. He says, Mishin nidbak v'nimtza chiyuvi, he has a positive test for corona, but he feels fine, and he's not suffering any symptoms, or maybe he has very light symptoms. Even if he doesn't have a sense of smell, he has to fast on Yom Kippur. There's no kula. But he says he wants to add a condition, and that is that this person who tested positive, and again, he has no symptoms or only very light symptoms, he has otherwise a clean, pretty much healthy bill of health. He's not a member of what's called Kvutzat Sikun Gavoa. Those who belong to this, have membership in this group, he says, and they're in a more dangerous situation, and these are people who suffer from other health conditions, like, for example, high blood pressure, or an obvious heavy weight. He says in such a case he should drink l'shiurim, as we said before, small amounts every 9 minutes. He says somebody who is a chole kasher, who is in a very heavy ill situation, And as we said before, there are three categories. There's Kal, there's Beinoni, and Kosher. If he has been classified as Kosher, then he's a Chol Sheish Bo Sakona, and he should eat and drink as much as he needs to. He doesn't have to wait intervals. He says in general, he adds a comment that most people who are in that category of Cholek Kasher, they're not capable of eating. And he says that goes without saying if they're on ventilators, but even if they're not on ventilators, he says these people who are Cholek Kasher, who are more or less in critical condition, they are very weak, such that they can't eat. Maybe they eat a small, very small amount. Now, if somebody has very heavy symptoms, very strong symptoms, for example, he has difficulty breathing, or he has high fever, or he feels very, very weak, then even if he's not in a hospital, he is at home, even if he's not on a ventilator, nevertheless, he's still considered a Chol Sheish Bo Sakona, he's allowed to eat and drink according to his need. And he ends this presentation by saying that we pray to the Rofe Kol Basar, Umafli Lasos, that he should send us very quickly the refuah for all the sick. And we should no longer hear Shod Veshever cries and so forth in our boundaries. And therefore, Ein Peretz v'ein Yotzeis v'ein Tzavcha b'rchov Oseh Tichle Shana v'kil Oseh Ein Teichel Shana b'rchoseh v'nizke Livasha Yeshua Olamis v'mherav Yimeinu Amen. Now the next section in the Minchas Asher addresses the nurses in the corona wards where they should be fasting on Yom Kippur. And, for example, in Shari Tzedek, in the ward for corona patients, and in many other hospitals across the country, if we could only add more staff, if we had more nurses, and each nurse would have a shorter round or shift, you know, that could help solve the problem. But if this is not possible, and there's a mitzuka, there's a very pressing need and very limited koach ha'odom, then we have to maximize the yi'ilut, meaning the performance, you know, the successful performance of each and every nurse. And Rav Weiss says that he did a lot of research on this, and he had long discussions with various physicians and minalim, you know, those who are in charge of different wings in the hospital, different machlakot. He even had discussions with various nurses. And he says that, first and foremost, the nurses, when they begin their shift, then on Erev Yom Kippur, if they don't eat, they will be too weak. And therefore, they should make sure on Erev Yom Kippur to drink as much as they can before they start their shift. And they should be totally hydrated before they start their shift. In any event, we don't have any more time to go into this. He has a long discussion here about the chashash sakana to the nurses if they fast on Yom Kippur, and od chazon l'moed amir tzashem, another time, another occasion, if we get to study this. Okay then, so here's where we're going to stop, and I wish everyone a gemar chesima tova, and Hashem should accept our prayers and protect our families, our communities. Ken yiratzon amir.